Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio number 454. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What's going on this week, sir?
Oh, not a heck of a lot. It's starting to feel a lot like, well, summer in the in the Midwest. But I am getting my annual spring allergies, and it have not been fun today. But other than that, I'm doing okay. How about yourself?
As I noted on ye old Twitter, and I've talked about on the show, last contract signed for work at the condo, renovations of Stunt Granny Studios, North Columbus version is almost at an end. It has been part DIY, part farm out work. Because there's just some things that you can't do yourself. It's nice that the relocation of Stunt Granny Studios North is almost upon us. I'm pretty excited about that. So yeah, there was that, and as usual, there was plenty of wrestling in our lives. This week, no matter the circumstances, and not that we're going to talk about it, although we're going to kind of talk about it, the Greatest Royal Rumble was on Friday, and the fallout from that happened at this week's Raw, and it's also leading to a pay-per-view on Sunday. And I've got to say, the WWE put themselves in quite a pickle here, as far as booking goes.
They definitely did. Two pay-per-views in 9 days is not an ideal situation at all. I guess the biggest news coming out of Greatest Royal Rumble was really not the Greatest Royal Rumble itself, but the messed up finish to the Roman Reigns Brock Lesnar match that had to be explained away on Monday. Not 100% sure exactly what they were even going for with that finish, how they felt.
Different than the referee's decision stands? I guess I did not. So the cage was not supposed to break.
I think the cage was supposed to break, but Roman Reigns' feet touched the ground first.
Oh right.
Brock Lesnar never left the
cage.
Match.
Yeah. Yeah, one would think that the referee would be in on the finish of the match, and hence call it correctly.
Well, he did. Brock Lesnar was supposed to win the match.
Oh,
but it just didn't. The execution of the finish just didn't work right with physics and all that with Roman Reigns.
Oh,
you know, landing on top of Lesnar and then you know, kind of rolling off.
If you say to yourself, "Oh, Lesnar's going to hit the ground first," I'm not quite sure why you thought. Well, I guess it was the fact that the cage hinged instead of coming off at the bottom. You know, because it was still on the apron. I'm not sure if it was still attached to the cage, but it kind of flipped over like that. The bottom bar of the cage acted like the hinge, and
yeah.
It left the bottom of the cage in place. And I'm not quite sure. Like, you couldn't really cut everything, or else the cage would have fallen apart at a sooner time.
Right.
But yeah, leaving the bottom hinged was a bad piece of engineering.
Right, right, right. Because it left Brock Lesnar's feet kind of dangling in the air, with dangling above the ground, and Roman Reigns then rolled off, and his feet clearly touched the floor. It was a poorly executed finish. Obviously, not something they could practice over and over again without risking injury to either competitor. So, it was something that just someone had an idea. I mean, the idea of the finish was something.
It was better than I. It was kind of funny. Jeremy talked to me about this, and he I mentioned or about the finish of the match, and I was throwing it out as a joke that there'd be some type of double count out. And so as soon as the finish happened, he was all, "Dude, you called it." Yeah, I didn't intentionally. I honestly didn't think it would happen because that seems like the worst case scenario, especially for Reigns. And I guess ahead of time I thought it was the worst thing, but it's kind of funny. Like, at least the Montreal crowd helped buy into it with the like, not that Reigns doesn't get booed a good amount, probably more than 50-50 most weeks, but Montreal was definitely about 90 to 10 as far as anti to pro Roman Reigns. And him being able to bitch about the victor, getting screwed out of the decision is kind of hilarious in my opinion. Like, that was one of the things on Raw that did kind of make me smile. I'm like, yep, just let them play in. Like, the WWE knows that he wasn't going to get a good reception in Canada. Or at least I would assume that, with Canada always seemed kind of at the forefront of, and I know it more applied to Canadian wrestlers, and all other wrestlers were bad, but, they always kind of like the heels a little bit more, in my opinion, too.
They call it Bizarro Land, although most major cities have been taken over by Bizarro Land. It was a good way to do it. It was a, I mean, in the end, this finish, it gave Roman Reigns a legitimate complaint, gave him the ability to say that he is the rightful champion. He should have rightfully beat Brock Lesnar. Crowds aren't going to like hearing it, but that's the game we're playing right now. It was more weird that they had Seth Rollins reiterate that in front of a said crowd when he was generally supposed to be someone who was well liked everywhere. But Seth Rollins was the only other person besides Roman Reigns who called out Brock Lesnar by name, so that may have been on design, because they definitely seem to be in the Seth Rollins business right now.
Well, yeah, and I mean, that is probably the other big question of the week, I would say, on Raw. Would be the fact that Seth Rollins, the WWE certainly had a lot of eggs in the Rollins basket. He blew out his knee doing that power bomb. And he hadn't really gotten on track until somewhat recently, I would say, because I mean, the babyface character wasn't quite clicking at first, and they finally found a good spot for him as a babyface character. I'd say maybe the last 3 or 4 months. And they really ramped it up, in my opinion, on Monday night there.
Yeah, they absolutely did. I mean, obviously, the reaction to the Seth Rollins backing up his Shield brother, and it was a brief smattering of booze. It really didn't affect Seth for the rest of the night. They definitely, they,
Yeah, and at least storyline-wise, they're still friends, so you can't really have him not say anything.
Right.
And but it was smart, like you said, to kind of have it be a very, it was a couple of comments, but it was not the majority of his speech.
No, and he's able to point, he's able to say that, he is the champion who's here week out defending his title. He obviously ended up getting challenged to defend his title, later that night by Finn Balor, which he retained. We'll probably talk more about the match in depth in a little bit here. And then on Sundays, I think little to no chance that he won't be walking out of Sunday with the Intercontinental Championship. So, and then from there, maybe he's somewhere close on the list for a Brock Lesnar title challenge in the coming months, because they really feel like they're really pushing him strong right now.
Yeah, I mean, that would certainly seem to be in the cards with how he was presented, how he was received, to be completely honest with you.
To jump forward to the match itself, for the amount of travel that Seth Rollins and Finn Balor did between, say, Thursday and Monday night, for them to go out there and put on a match like that, hats off to both of them. That's one of the incredible, performances of the year, really, when you factor in the travel to and from Saudi Arabia. I don't know if they were two of the people who got affected by flight cancellations in New York, which led to many talents having to drive 6 hours to Montreal even after the Saudi Arabia, trip.
Yeah, because I remember seeing Natalia mentioning something about driving up there over the weekend. I believe. I was just like, oh man, that's rough.
Yeah, absolutely. And for Rollins and Balor to have the match they had, and once again, Seth, of course, won the match. He won the match clean. He's been winning a number of matches clean recently. He's protected. I think that hour plus performance on Raw in the back before Elimination Chamber. Yeah, Elimination Chamber. I think that was the beginning of something for him. I
Yeah.
don't. He was factored in at WrestleMania, although maybe not necessarily in the biggest spot. But post WrestleMania, he's definitely getting the big push, because you just can. Maybe at some point later, you can go back to Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns. He can't be next.
Oh.
Especially if next is before SummerSlam, right? If it's Money in the
Yeah,
Bank,
I
for example.
it's been done a lot. I mean, I did make the other comment to Jeremy. It's not like the match format is going to change that much. It's going to be suplex,
Yeah, I
suplex,
mean,
suplex.
they.
Small guy gets a hope spot. Suplex, suplex, suplex. Small guy gets a hope spot.
Yeah, they have a pattern match that's not very exciting. Though it was incredibly exciting, 3 years ago, but 3 years later, they've got nothing new to show, and it probably shouldn't be Roman again. But I don't know if they can help themselves. But I could see Seth in the interim. Interestingly, Braun Strowman made no threats towards Brock Lesnar. He's despite winning the Greatest Royal Rumble and
Oh.
seemingly being positioned as the next guy, but maybe not yet for that one. But
Yeah,
Braun
I
Strowman's another one who was put in kind of a weird position in Montreal, having to face Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn in Montreal, Quebec.
Oh.
He actually, though, did get cheered more than a lot, probably almost anyone would against them in that, because he's just so dynamic and everything he does is just so brutal, and you can't help but be excited by watching him just steamroll over guys. whether it's their hometown heroes or members of your own family, I don't think you're just like, whoa.
Yeah, what he is doing, because I think not just Rollins and Balor, but in general, I mean, I thought it was a fairly good in-ring night on Raw.
It really was. That six-man tag was probably the second best match on the show. Of course, the running joke of the whole night was Jonathan Coachman saying, "That was the best match of the night." No, that was the best match of the night. So there were a number of strong in-game performances. I mean, I think everyone in the six-man worked well. It's kind of a weird situation with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn being so incredibly popular there, and that added to, you know, the boost for Roman Reigns. Bobby Lashley has so far not developed any kind of a real emotional connection to the WWE audience, and he's been given nothing storyline wise, nothing promo wise. He has the worst music in all of WWE this side of Big Cass. Yeah, there's just nothing about Lashley's, you know, presentations besides he's really, really strong to get behind. And unfortunately, Big Cass found out at the Greatest Royal Rumble, Lashley ain't that strong.
I'm trying to think, because I feel like I saw that.
He dropped him on the vertical suplex, you know, trying to do that big. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always a lot of help that goes into those moves.
It is, but that's a very tall, very long man.
Yeah, no matter how, like, for as big as Lashley is, like, he isn't super tall.
No, he's no, he really is not. I don't know, he might not be 6 feet. He might be 5'10 or 5'11, actually, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I guess he's still probably marginally taller than I am, but that isn't really saying a whole lot. So, you know, yeah, he's a big guy, but, yeah, he's certainly not quite the size of a Big Cass, even if... I was kind of hoping that they dropped the 7-foot thing, but they're still going with it.
Yeah, well, on SmackDown, they can maintain the illusion a lot better because none of the other really tall guys are on SmackDown.
Well, yeah, because I was kind of laughing. Like, I don't know what they bill Braun Strowman as, but when he's almost the same height as Big Cass, you've got to start scratching your head when they start saying 7 foot, because I think they only bill Strowman as like 6'8 or 6'9.
Yeah, and their big idea last summer was doing Big Cass, Big Show matches. That didn't help. Although a Big Show probably has maybe shrunk a little bit, you know.
Oh,
at his age, but even still, you could tell.
Yeah, and it went with the shtick before. I guess I just would have assumed that, Enzo's gone. We can just scrub this part from. And like I said, I mean, he was gone for a long time.
It is kind of all Big Cass has to offer that he's tall. right now, I mean.
Yeah, this is true.
He's gonna get his chance.
I mean, he's definitely got his chance now that Enzo is not around. We'll see what happens. I suppose. I still don't have a lot of faith. But, you know, hey, that's just me.
he can go by the wayside as just another big guy. I'm not even going to say I'm betting on him. But he's going to get his chance.
Certainly. And, yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy that his first chance is against Daniel Bryan. I guess I did at least somewhat like the reasoning that he came up with. Like, it's better than nothing, I suppose.
Yeah, it is better than nothing, but yeah, it's still a tough match. Especially a tough match, Daniel Bryan, trying to figure out, you know, what to do with with this big guy. I could certainly see Big Cass going over, possibly do that interference from Miz, so that he can move more towards Miz and Daniel Bryan. But yeah, I mean, it's a weird match for Daniel Bryan this early in his comeback, for sure.
Well, yeah. So I mean, Bobby Lashley isn't the only one on the comeback trail that's gotten into an odd spot.
Yeah, I mean, I know Daniel Bryan can't, you know, wrestle all the indie darlings like Joe and Styles or Nakamura, even though he's not really an indie darling. You know, he can't wrestle them every week or anything, but. But man, but Big Cass, that's a tough one for a smaller, you know, kind of submission based wrestler to try and get a match out of.
Yeah, it's the Styles make the fight kind of situation, and it'll be kind of interesting to see Daniel Bryan work with him. But yeah, I guess it's always one of those things that you kind of hope that, you know, someone that good helps teach the guy. I always remember my classic that I remember. Oh, I remember knocking The Rock because he wasn't that good in the ring, but he had, you know, his series of matches with Chris Benoit. And I think at that point he really got even better in the ring, you know.
I would agree. I think that series really did help him. But by that point he didn't have a great match in Triple H. He'd had his matches with Austin, so I don't. But I did think after the Benoit, Rock did become a better performer. I think he became a guy who really figured out, you know, how to do a match, how to lay out matches, and even how to have matches with how to have. You know, entertaining matches with people who are less workers than he was. I think from that point. So yeah, I agree. He certainly learned. I think. Yeah. Rock became a definitely, you know, around that time period. You know, he became a good worker himself, but not just someone who could be carried, quote unquote.
Yeah. So it's kind of crazy that I'm comparing Big Cass and The Rock. Because there's miles apart, and Rock, like you said, was already kind of on an upward trajectory. But I mean, I don't know if that's part of their thing. You know, that might be just part of their thinking to try and help him out to, you know, expedite his in-ring learning to maybe further his career.
I mean, having Big Show try to teach him how to work out like a big man, that didn't really work out very well. but although it did work out for Big Show and Braun Strowman, though, it worked out. So, again, Big Cass really, really, you know, once again, not, you know, of course, you know, Enzo, you know, ruined his own career, but they were bred the NXT system to be a tag team together. They very, very rarely had singles matches. So, yeah, it's... Yeah, Big Cass is going to be more of a project going forward.
Well, and I guess I didn't think about that. Like, he's still got to establish a solo character outside of that. Which, you know, he's kind of working on a whole lot.
yeah, I mean, he's still kind of doing this, you know, big talking, you know, big walking,
big
Yorker
city
type deal.
Yeah.
So he certainly hasn't grown. He hasn't grown character wise really at all. So, I was hoping for more of an alliance between him and the Miz. The star bodyguard relationship. Maybe we'll still get that, but I'm not gonna bet the farm on Big Cass's success.
Yeah. So that was kind of over on the SmackDown ledger. I'm trying to think. We covered on the Raw side. Balor Rollins. Oh, I guess one of the other good matches to kind of at least keep Raw on the beginning here. Sasha Banks and oh shit, why am I forgetting who she had a match with last night or Monday?
Ruby Riot.
Ruby Riot.
They had a good match. I think, yeah, once again, still continuing the Sasha Bailey storyline. It's just in this holding pattern with them just refusing to really have either of them really do anything dastardly to the other and be the heel in this story. Maybe the Riot Squad is going to be the impetus for them getting back together on the same page. We'll see, but I really wish we would hurry this thing up. In this regard, it's not working for me.
Yeah, I don't think it's doing anyone any favors, honestly. Because, like, this is the second time, I feel like, and they went more into teasing the breakup this time around. And, I mean, they certainly had segments, you know, hinting that it had happened. But, yeah, the first thing I thought about, I'm like, are they going to have them get back together now?
That might be possible, but right now they're both coming off like, well, they're both coming off like unlikable people who should just get over it.
Oh,
but
right.
Or one of them needs to just really, really, really do something. Most likely Sasha needs to do something real, really dastardly and
well,
and be a full heel.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's the thing that's kind of weird is that certainly during this more extended feud starting that they've had recently that kind of wrapped around WrestleMania and even had some action within the Women's Royal Rumble, or not Royal Rumble, Battle Royal itself.
Yeah, well this all kind of really started, you know, at the Elimination Chamber. That's over 2 months ago now. We've been on this treadmill with these two, so I'm definitely not into this whole storyline. But the Sasha Ruby Riott match was good. Ruby Riott looked maybe the best she's looked since she's been on the main roster. The Riot Squad itself, you know, maybe I would say that they look the, even including six woman tag matches, they look the most like a well oiled unit in this match. That, you know, yeah, that Ruby Riott is the leader. They are, you know, Liv Morgan and Sarah Logan are there to, you know, serve her, and
oh,
they, you know, they at least do something with that thing.
Well, yeah, I think they've at least done a half-decent job of that, but they really, well, and Riott's definitely had the better of the matches. She had a pretty good match on SmackDown with Charlotte Flair at one juncture, which they did reference. Yeah, so they still do not have a defining characteristic that would really help them out. But, you know, as a unit itself, aside from, hey, they're really good friends, okay, I still don't understand why at all. But, yeah, I do think that they've looked a little bit better and more comfortable on Raw for whatever reason, which is good news. You know, it's kind of too early to say that they are being written differently since it's only been a few weeks. But
yeah,
the presentation at this point's been better.
it's definitely been a better presentation, especially as I said on Monday. Ruby Riott looked really good. She got a big win. So she can be, you know, moved forward. I'm fairly certain that Nia Jax is retaining over Alexa Bliss on Sunday. So having a three-woman group, you know, on Raw that can help having, you know, matches with, say, her, say, Ruby Riott and Nia Jax, and Ruby Riott having these two women running constant interference to have a more, that believable match that is a struggle with a, once again, a giant babyface champion.
Right.
Because I for the most part, I see, you know, Nia Jax staying champion. So, you know, if I had to guess, you want to get to SummerSlam and do a Nia Jax Ronda Rousey match? Because on the other spectrum, you don't. Nia Jax might be the only woman on the Raw roster currently that they could put against Ronda Rousey and put, you know, Rousey in any believable jeopardy, and vice versa. Rousey is the only one who could put Nia Jax in any believable jeopardy.
They certainly have a. I don't know if you'd call it a good problem to have with both of them, because it does make it really hard to put them in matches consistently. But I mean, I don't know how many times we've also mentioned that people don't need to be wrestling every week either.
No, they don't, and they don't need to be standing in people's corners in the 10 o'clock in the third hour doldrums. There was no reason for Rousey to be on that show in that position. I know the idea is that she's a weekly character on the show, so that which makes it enticing for their future television partners. But if you don't have anything that interesting for her to do, you're just hurting her, essentially hurting her star power by putting her on at, you know, 10:20 p.m. and in another wrestler's corner, and she doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, and sitting on her hands basically was what I was just gonna say.
Yeah. Although she really ran for Alexa Bliss. I was surprised that she really didn't catch up to her. And then it's like, uh oh, now what do we do?
Yeah, that was one of those few times where I'm like, oh my god, she's really fast. And then I'm like, hold on, why is she not catching Alexa Bliss?
I guess Alexa Bliss is an athlete herself, so she could.
Yeah,
and she had the running start, so I'm sure she kind of maybe looked behind her and realized that, oh crap, no, I really have to.
Yeah, I've really got to kick this into high gear.
With Rousey, you know, she's, you know, still, you know, learning, so she's not, and I'm sure they didn't. They probably didn't think it was important enough to, you know, go over with her, you know, over and over again. So it's like, you know, no, you got to do a working run, because you can't actually catch her.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say that was quick thinking on Bliss's part to really kick it into high gear, so that she could match Rousey. But you know, it was just it was kind of funny because it was almost comical, because like you said, like there's usually a working run, so it's usually not that fast. And you're sitting there going, half the time when I do see a working run, I'm just like, oh my god, come on, man. I know you can run faster than that. So when you actually see a legitimate run, it was kind of shocking.
Well, at least it wasn't like that night that years ago with Mark Henry running after the Nexus, but then somehow ending up in front of them.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
Who knew Mark could run that fast?
Oh, man. Yeah, so, but I mean, that was actually a really, that was another part that was actually kind of enjoyable about Raw. Just because another thing about the working run, there's usually like maybe one revolution around the ring. Like, they were on, like, lap 3 by the time the segment played out. Because they were just flat out running. So it really kind of seemed out of the blue. Oh man, that was kind of fun, really. I kind of forgot
That
about
was
that.
funny. That was definitely entertaining.
Yeah, as much as I do think storyline wise, Raw was a bit of a mess, but if you kind of take it in chunks, it was good. Well, like we've said, there were good matches, and there was some entertaining stuff like that. But overall, yeah, the two pay-per-views in 9 days really didn't do them a whole lot of favors because A, they established kind of the dual matches already, and they just kind of doubled down on them a little bit this week. But it's just a bad spot to be put in, and I don't know how you do that well.
Yeah, I mean the one thing that I think that they have done well is the progression of the AJ Styles Shinsuke Nakamura feud, with them having a double count out on at the Greatest Royal Rumble. Although I would have, once again, I mentioned it last week, I would have gone with the AJ Styles hits the low blow and gets himself disqualified finish. But I guess they went with the finish they went with, and it's fine. I know some people, such particularly Bruce Mitchell of the Torch, has a taking an issue with this match being made no disqualification, when that doesn't make any sense at all. When you just give a guy who's been low blowing his opponent free rein to low blow him in the match. But I think, once again, I think after having a no decision in one match, it's good to guarantee a finish. And we have to
Oh.
see where they go, because I feel like there's still more life in this feud. So AJ Styles retaining and then moving on to Samoa Joe, even though I obviously would surely enjoy an AJ Styles Samoa Joe feud, I feel like it's not the end for Styles and Nakamura. And I guess I'm looking at a title change, because while
Oh.
Samoa Joe made his threat known, and that's certainly for down the line, I don't see Samoa Joe getting the win over Roman Reigns. Reigns really desperately needs to spear and pin someone, so.
Yeah, I agree with you on both counts. Where you one would think that Nakamura has A, he started to find a little bit of footing on his way to WrestleMania as far as the character goes. Evil Kinshasa Shinsuke has been outstanding. If you're gonna give him the belt and you want to make him a heel, have him beat the top one, if not the, well, he could be the top baby face in the company. Or hold on, is
Well,
that
yeah,
even under
I think
dispute?
I guess I wouldn't argue that AJ Styles is the top baby face in the company, especially if he argues the other one is Roman Reigns. He gets booed everywhere he
Well,
goes.
I would say that Braun Strowman is number one on Raw.
Oh yeah. As a pure baby face who gets cheered and is considered popular, I would say that Braun Strowman is, well, I mean, for pure popularity, I don't think it's going to, unless we're talking prime era, top guys like Austin, Rock, Hogan, even Cena. Even though obviously Cena got the infamous mixed reaction, I don't think anyone, city for Cena, city for city, pop for pop, I don't think anyone's as popular as Dan, has been as popular as Daniel Bryan in the
Oh.
last 5 years. So and currently today with his return, but once again, right? Well, obviously in a few big casts, he's not being positioned as the number one baby face.
Oh,
AJ Styles
right.
certainly is as the champion. And what I would call, even though they're not really establishing any one match as the main event of Backlash, I assume that that's the main event match that will go on last, because the title's at stake and there's no title involved in Reigns and Joe, and I don't foresee any of the women, either the women's matches, they're the next highest promoted matches going last. So yeah, it's been, it's again, the progression of the Styles Nakamura feud since WrestleMania has been tremendous. Even though this is going to be their third, major televised pay-per-view meeting, because they had that Greatest Rumble throw shown in, thrown in the middle, 90s before Backlash. I think there's more life in this feud. I think I would compare it more to, you know, the New Day versus the Usos than maybe, say, Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, where, okay, we can do this 4 times, 5 times on pay-per-view in a 3 or 4 month period, and no one's going to complain.
Yeah, I think the character development is a big thing both of those feuds that you've mentioned. Because, I think we had mentioned back when New Day and the Usos were feuding that it really gave New Day new life in a lot of ways, because they had to deal with, like, an imminent threat and everything. And, again, Nakamura's character has undergone such a change since WrestleMania that it makes it more palatable over a longer time period.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and again, Sunday is May 6th. WrestleMania was April the 8th. This as a feud with real heat and a strong babyface heel dynamic isn't even going to be a month old after after Backlash is over, even though they've had 3 matches in that time. So I definitely could see Nakamura taking the title, leading to a fourth, title match between the two at Money in the Bank in June, which is thankfully is 6 weeks after Sunday, so that they will definitely have time to relax a little bit and to get things in order, because that is considered if there's a big five pay per views, that Money in the Bank is that fifth pay per view now, so. They'll have 6 weeks to get everything in order. Things can stop being so manic and just really build to a big pay per view there. And I think maybe a final Styles Nakamura match would be a hell of a match there. In addition to having the two Money in the Bank ladder matches and possibly a Brock Lesnar Universal Title defense.
Agreed. And I'm trying to figure out what else happened there on Ye Olde Smack of Downs. Ms. TV, I guess we could certainly talk about.
I guess we could talk about it. I don't think it was not one of the better Miz TVs. I don't think Jeff Hardy's charisma really, really shines in extended talking segments. Although Miz can more than carry his weight, and then Randy Orton, Shelton Benjamin getting involved. I'm have taking some issues with with involving guys like Hardy and Orton. Benjamin have their place. Putting them all in one segment and then into one match, and then reminding you that these guys were all wrestling each other 10 years ago, and then even putting back that The Miz was cutting his teeth 10 years ago on Raw and SmackDown teaming with John Morrison and whatnot. So it's just like these you just reminded how long these guys have been around. Well, in the case of certainly a case of Orton and the Miz nonstop, but then throwing Hardy and Benjamin at their ages now, and I wasn't the biggest fan of it. Although it had a good finish, and I think Orton and Hardy can have a good match against each other, but they really need to stop advertising matches as for the first time in 10 years, because it's
That was one I'm just like, oh my god.
don't point that. Don't point out how old these people. I felt the same way during before the Cena Triple H match at Greatest Royal Rumble. I was like, stop pointing out how old these people are.
Yeah, don't remind me that I've been watching them for more than a decade. And I guess one possible ray of hope, in my opinion, Rusev Day, possibly being rejoined by Lana Day.
See, thought as she's trying to push Aiden English out of the whole, out of the equation, and he is a huge factor in the success of Rusev Day, because obviously the original song he came up with, although he's been doing less music, it feels, and more like spoken word poetry, you know, bordering on rap, right, before doing the falsetto Rusev Day. So he's been kind of losing his gimmick, you know, to a degree.
Well, if they go babyface, I don't see any problem, because they're back in the day was the We Want Lana chance. And again, definitely the quote unquote bizarro world crowd seemed very pro Lana.
Oh yeah. I mean, I'm just saying, I'm not sure about, you know, removing Aiden English from the act. That's where they're going. I don't know if that's the best, but yeah, putting Lana and Rusev back, they should never be apart. So I've never understood them being put apart. It's obvious that she's never going to be a good wrestler, so stop trying with that. Just put her and Rusev back together.
Yeah, I'm sure that she's at least passable enough to be in a women's tag match every now and again if they need her.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's no reason, because, I mean, I guess I don't realize how long it's been since she's been on TV. But I feel like it's been probably over a year, really. And if she's been training that long, and nothing's really come of it, that's not a good sign.
Well, there was the injury to Tamina. Well, it definitely hasn't been close to a year. They went with Tamina, who then got injured, and then. She was in the Women's Royal Rumble and in the WrestleMania Battle Royal. But that was just a situation, you know, where they just bodies.
They need, yeah. Yeah, and it's now, not good when you're included and they just needed bodies. I mean, they didn't pay any local wrestlers, really, to pop into these events. But, you know, yeah, it's not a good spot to be in.
Yeah, so, yeah. Putting her back with Rusev, you know, it's definitely the right call.
Yeah, and I guess I would be fine if they had a trio of sorts, because Aiden English still serves as something of a shield if you need it for Rusev. Although, you know, I guess as a babyface, you don't really need a shield as much anymore either, which is makes one viable reason to. Get rid of it, Aiden English, but I agree that the introduction, I guess, I feel like is part of the act at this point, and it would be kind of weird to dump that. But I guess I don't think it'd be all bad if they did.
And then I think the most other important part of SmackDown to talk about a little bit is the main event, the six women. Tag team match. Definitely a very fun match. Charlotte, Asuka, and Becky Lynch certainly made for an exciting team. And Carmella and the Iconics were definitely, in that respect, you know, good foils. They did a very, once again, another very annoying promo before, you know, before the match, backstage. And, you know, they're great heels at getting that kind of heat. But it does become, you know, it's definitely very apparent that, you know, the workers are on the babyface side, you know, and also including, you know, Naomi, who's, you know, wasn't in the match, but still, you know, there's four babyfaces on the SmackDown Women's roster who are good wrestlers against the three that aren't quite there.
Yeah, they trust Peyton Royce the most out of the three, between her, Billie Kay, and Carmella.
Yeah, they did. But again, there certainly was going to need to be a heel turn, in the not too distant future. You know, to balance things out a little better. But for what that match was. The heels played their role well. The baby faces were exciting together. It felt like if they were together, they were together. They were obviously feeling it. Charlotte Flair was just busting out all of her big moves and dives in the match. So, you know, it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly, in general, in-ring work, this week, though there may have been some jet lag, was not lacking. Cause even Xavier Woods and Sheamus was, fairly decent for what it was. You know, it wasn't really an extended match, but it was pretty solid. And then I guess since, we're recording a day later than normal, since, hockey takes over my life at this point of the year, especially with the Penguins going for a possible three-peat, we both watched, the Smack of Downs, or not SmackDown, oh god, NXT, to, do a little, talking about that, since we don't always get to it, recording on Tuesdays for the most part. What are your big takeaways from NXT post WrestleMania?
Well, I think they did a good job making post, you know, with the end of the takeover and maybe the first week or two, they did a good job making you think that things were over between Tommaso Ciampa and Johnny Gargano, the villain was vanquished and the hero and his bride were right off into the sunset, and that's not what's happening. I mean, one loss was not enough to send the evils of Tommaso Ciampa running for the hills. He is still out to ruin the life of Johnny Gargano, and what they did last week was nothing short of tremendous with the beatdown and the injury and the incredible image of Tommaso Ciampa standing on top of the production truck, you know, just watching Gargano be loaded into the ambulance while his wife Candice LeRae was crying her eyes out.
I mean, there's just, it's always such fundamental build, but it works in NXT. You know, it's always surprising that sometimes they can't get that same handle over on the main roster sometimes. But yeah, Ciampa, for as much as Gargano was obsessed with him leading up to the takeover match, it certainly makes it makes more sense that Ciampa would not go away after a single loss, just because of how much he felt like Gargano had fucked with his life.
Yeah, absolutely. It all makes great sense. The follow-up was tremendous with Candice LeRae, still very upset, still in tears on her promo, and then leading into her match with Bianca Belair, where she was, you know, mentally not in the match and emotionally distraught and was just, you know, essentially destroyed by Bianca Belair, who showed her no mercy. Great, because that's her character.
Yeah, and that was one where we were talking earlier about Lashley having problems suplexing Big Cass, or at least doing the extended suplex. Bianca Belair certainly got some love from Candice LeRae, who held tight as she pressed, as Belair pressed her for the press slam. Even coming up from the ground, you could tell that LeRae kind of had herself latched on to her arms, and she just kind of deadlifted her up. That was one of the more impressive things that I've seen this week, which is, you know, again, there's been a good week of wrestling. I'm like, dang, man, that I knew that she was, because she was a power lifter in college. And she certainly was set to show that off with that move.
Yeah, she absolutely did. It was very impressive. I mean, you don't see gorilla presses in women's matches very, very often. Even Nia Jax doesn't make it a regular part of her repertoire. But Bianca Belair, very, you know, pound for pound, may very well be stronger than Nia Jax. incredibly strong woman. She's definitely got a lot of potential, and they were able to give her a big win over, you know, one of the more pushed women in NXT, but also giving Candice LeRae the out that, you know, her heart wasn't in this match.
Yeah, it all ties nicely again together with the storyline there. I'm trying to think, the main event, was kind of fun, with, Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong.
Right. I can't imagine a match between those two not being very good, very strong. Yeah. I mean, those two just, they're two guys who just, you know, not afraid to beat the hell out of it, so they're not afraid to throw each other around. Yeah, there's definitely chemistry there, and I mean, Roderick Strong is definitely better as a heel as part of Undisputed Era. So that's all, you know, that was done very well.
Yeah, he's always looked like a heel to me. Like, I kind of just want to punch him in the face just in his natural state. So it makes more sense to have him as a heel. and I'm trying to think if there is any other small things. I guess I am eventually looking forward to the debut of Andrade Cien Almas on SmackDown Live, which hopefully will be coming next week. I believe they keep on promising it, and it keeps on not happening.
Yeah, they're definitely coming, but they're dragging it out for however long they will. It could be next week, could be the week after, could be, you know, who knows. Hopefully they will be put in a good position right from the start.
Oh, and... Go ahead.
Yeah, hopefully they'll be put in a good position right from the start. I don't know exactly who first you should be against. Maybe go right after Jeff Hardy in the U.S. title, or find another, you know, or yeah, obviously just, you know, start with another babyface or some squash wins, and just really gotta, you know, establishing, you know, the Almas Zelina Vega relationship. That really became the highlight in the centerpiece of NXT. It's a ready-made act that does not need anything really changed or updated about it. So hopefully they will just let them be.
Yeah, and I guess something. Speaking of, possibly I would assume NXT. There is the report out that the WWE signed Keith Lee, who was at, you know, an event. He was at Access, I believe, in New Orleans this year. I am in no way surprised. He kind of came out of nowhere on Ring of Honor with Shane Taylor. And they were both impressive at that point. And, you know, I wasn't sure of how much experience they had. And he's had more experience since then.
I will not pretend to be an expert on Keith Lee. I've actually never seen a match of his. I wasn't watching him on our TV during that time. And I believe, you know, he's been on WWE's radar for a while. It's probably why he stopped working for Ring of Honor completely and off their TV and went to the safer arms of Evolve and Gabe Sapolsky's family of promotions. And, you know, he and did a lot of work internationally. I know he did work in Europe quite a bit, and the UK. So, yeah, he's, from what I understand, just, you know, he's a guy who's ready. Again, I'm disappointed in myself that I've never actually seen a match of this. I look forward to seeing him in NXT very soon.
Yeah, so I would certainly assume, just because I do think that he's still fairly young in ring-wise, that he would be headed to NXT. I would be pretty surprised if he jumped straight to the main roster, which has reserved for very few people.
Yeah, that's definitely reserved for very few people, as you said. Yeah, I think he'll definitely, NXT, once again, continues, always needs to be replenished, and he'd be a really good addition to NXT.
And I thought one sort of non-wrestling topic that is at least worth mentioning at the end of the day, Glenn Jacobs wins the Republican nomination for the possibility that he will be Knox County mayor. I believe it's Knox County, yeah. Right?
It is Knox County, not Knoxville. But there is a difference. I Wikipedia'd it. I still don't completely understand the difference between Knox County and Knoxville. And, but yeah, that it is Knox County that Glenn Jacobs will be running for mayor against in the general election in August. My understanding of Knox County politics is, if you win the Republican primary, you are pretty much guaranteed to. to win the general election. If you look at any the graphics they showed, over 40,000 people voted in the Republican primary, and only 7,000 people voted in the Democratic primary.
This is a dog. No, I've got to admit, I did not look at those numbers. But yeah, if you squeak out. And as it seems, he did the narrowest of wins in the Republican primary. That would seem to set you up when you're more than a 4-1 favorite.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's pretty much gonna, unless something really awful is revealed about him going forward. He obviously seems that even that it won't be enough. I mean, the man has already burned his brother alive and buried him alive, and then
slept with a corpse,
his ex-girlfriend, and fornicated with a corpse. So the voters have already looked past all of that. So I think too, he's just sailing for Mr. Jacobs, and he will be have a pretty easy win in the general election. And it'll be interesting to see if he does any wrestling between now and then, some form of a retirement match, possibly.
Oh,
this summer could be in the offing if he wants to do that. Because once again, it does appear that, you know, he's got this thing in the bag and doesn't really need to. Doesn't even need to campaign that hard at this point. So,
yeah, his hard campaigning is over.
Yeah, and he has said that if he were to win, that he would absolutely stop wrestling, you know, cold turkey for as long as he was the mayor for however many terms he would be allowed to have. So, he's already, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
50 or almost 50, so I'm pretty sure if we haven't already seen his last match, he will be seeing his last match in the coming months.
Yeah, he certainly. He has had another guy that, though older than some of the ones mentioned earlier with Orton and Hardy and the like, he's been around for more than, far more than even 10 years. When you start talking 20 years ago, you know, there's kind of a limit. He did a great job of keeping himself relevant for as long as he did.
Yeah, absolutely.
In multiple gimmicks, obviously Kane is the most famous and longest running, I would think, of all of his characters.
Oh, he is 51 years old, which means he's only like less than 2 years young, literally, legitimately less than 2 years younger than the Undertaker. I would have guessed that that would have been, he would have had a few years his junior, but
yeah,
not that much, it appears. So yeah, So yes, we'll certainly be seeing the end of Kane's in-ring career very shortly here.
Yeah, so God bless. He has something after wrestling. Maybe the next time that someone, an authority figure, threatens another wrestler, that they won't have a job after wrestling. They can go, look, Kane got elected mayor. You can't, you can't tell me I can't get a job after I leave here. Buzz off. Oh, and I suppose with that bad joke, I will say I'm at Frango 11. He's at Chris Calamita. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you may listen to us, so that hey, we might get more popular. And I will admit, I didn't look at the numbers themselves. But I did see that our episode from last week talking about Bruno Sammartino did very well. So that was...
Thanks, Bruno.
Yeah.
You sold another house out.
Thanks, thanks, guy that died. It really helped us out. Sad thing is that that does typically happen. I believe when the Macho Man passed, we had one of our higher rated shows when that happened.
I'm sure the Observer and the Torch also saw their, you know, their subscriptions spike. Hey, it's what happens. People want to hear the people's takes on the recently deceased. There's I'm sure when someone important dies, there's a spike in newspapers. Like television, it's what happens. And, thank you all for tuning in to hearing two guys who were not experts on the man's life and career, but certainly did our best to pay tribute to a great.
So yeah, and I guess with all that out of the way, Bell Time Beer, just the regular Stunt Granny Brewing 5C Pale Ale. Which had a little bit of a carbonation problem on my part, a hair too much sugar, and things get a little too fizzy. So, with that being the Bell Time Beer of the Week, I am out.
Later.